my father has been dead about 8 years, so I feel pretty safe telling a story about him. Actually, he enjoyed being talked about. He enjoyed attention. But sometimes the stories he generated were not flattering, and this is one of them. So Dad was known for his sense of humor. He could regale you with stories. He could use funny voices and do impressions, and he was very quick with the witty banter, and he loved practical jokes. But sometimes people were sacrificed in his pursuit of a laugh. So, and especially his children. So you've heard that expression, humor at someone else's expense. And that was his specialty. So in terms of us kids, at the dinner table, there are eight of us, or, at a larger social gathering, there would be... I feel like he didn't pause and reflect on whether the witty retort or witty remark that he was about to let fly would hurt someone's feelings. I just don't think he did that. But this story is not about his spontaneous verbal insults. It's more about his planned out, orchestrated practical jokes. And here's a couple of quick examples. I remember once... overhearing him on the phone. He was calling a very sick friend and pretending to be a salesman for a Forest Lawn mortuary. And he was offering him, have you made your arrangements? Do you need to purchase a plot? That kind of thing. And then sometimes he involved us kids. And when I was in high school, I remember he coerced me into calling the wife of a friend of his and asking for the husband, using a sexy Swedish accent, because I was supposed to be Inga, the stewardess he had met on a recent European flight. And I can't remember how long Dad kept these things going, but, certainly a few minutes, long enough to do some psychological damage. But the story I'm about to tell you, I think, best sums up his character. So this is the 1970s. I was in high school. I was the last of eight kids left at home with my tired parents. And Dad was unemployed a lot at that time, and he had way too much time on his hands. It was summertime, ice cream truck season. And we lived on a cul-de-sac, which was a convenient place for an ice cream purveyor to apply his wares to large groups of children. And so one day the ice cream truck was out there in the cul-de-sac, and Dad was listening to the song, which happened to be The Entertainer, played at a high register. And he said, "I bet I could play that." And he went to the piano and he sat down at the kind of high keys and plucked it out. He was a pretty good musician. And he practiced a few times. And it sounded just like the ice cream truck, and he played it over and over. You only have to learn the first, 12 bars, because an ice cream truck song only lasts about that long, and then they just play it over and over into infinity. So he learned about the first 12 bars of The Entertainer, and when he got it down, he went and got his tape recorder, which was kind of a hefty little box encased in leather, and he set it on the piano, and he recorded himself playing The Entertainer, the first 12 bars, over and over. And I knew what he was going to do with this recording, but if you tried to interfere with one of Dad's schemes, he really laid into you. And anyway, you probably couldn't prevent him from going through with it. So what was the point of sticking your neck out? That was my reasoning. So a few days later, he's at home, nothing to do. Just a dangerous amount of time on his hands. And he notices that the ice cream truck has not come yet. So he goes to the den windows, and he places the tape recorder on the windowsill, and he opens the window, and he cranks up the volume, and he hides behind the curtain. Now, I watched this from the living room, standing way back from the window so I wouldn't be seen, and it was just tragic. So I think a lot of the children had actually been waiting for the ice cream truck, because it was just a few seconds into the song, a whole bunch of them came bursting out of their houses. and the little ones had their moms with them. And they're running up and down the sidewalk, running back and forth, running back and forth. They're going to the corner where the main street was, looking up and down the street. Where's the ice cream truck, Mommy? Where is it? And after a while, they went back into their houses, and I could hear Dad chuckling from behind the curtain. And then maybe 15 minutes later, he did it again. They come out again with the moms and everything. They're so confused and desperate. And the third time, he didn't get such a response, you know, a satisfying response. So then the fun was over for him, and he just put the tape recorder away. And I had mixed feelings about this. I was happy for Dad that he succeeded in his evil plan. And for one thing, that would put him in a good mood, which was good for me. But of course, I felt bad for those kids. I mean, how pathetic. I knew their little hearts were broken for the afternoon. And imagine the confusion and the conversations that went on in the houses. And how could this be explained? But I forgot about it because this sort of thing was pretty commonplace in my house. And maybe a week later, one of the cul-de-sac moms showed up at our door, Bev. Bev was such a nice young woman, and my chief employer, she hired me maybe a few times a month to babysit her two little kids, and Bev was had come over to see if I could babysit Saturday night. Was I available? Yes, I'm available every Saturday night. And by the way, was I around the other day when the ice cream truck song was playing, and there was no truck to be seen anywhere? Yeah, I was. You know, that was actually my dad. He did that. And Bev looked so confused, and she said, What do you mean? And I knew I was probably treading on thin ice, but I kind of had to keep going, you know, after saying what I had said. And I said, he just recorded the ice cream song on the piano and then played it out the window. And here was an instance, and not the only instance in my childhood, but here's an instance where the twisted private culture of my family was witnessed by a normal person. And Bev said, "Why on earth would he do that?" And then, even though it was no use, I tried to explain how tricking a bunch of little children into thinking an ice cream truck was nearby was like a harmless, wholesome activity. It was just good fun, but I lost Bev's trust in that moment, and she was very upset, and she was actually crying, and she said, she felt betrayed. She'd always thought my father was such a nice man. And what about Eugene? Why didn't you stop him? Why would you let him do something so cruel to the neighborhood children, to her children? Didn't I care about little Darren and Emily at all? She thought I was fond of them. Why didn't I do something? I could have at least come out to the cul-de-sac and told the kids it was just a joke. Why did I let him just go on with it? And that was pretty much it for my beautiful relationship with Bev and her family. I lost her trust, and rightly so. I don't think I ever babysat for them again. I don't quite remember. But looking back, I wish I had said to Bev, "You know what? I'm the real victim here." Because that guy is my father.